You're listening to Greater LA from KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hi, I'm Steve Chiatakis. If you live in the city of Los Angeles and you're eligible to vote, you've probably got a ballot sitting at home right now waiting for you to choose your government officials, including the next mayor. And if you don't, well, you can register to vote. It is easy. Go to registertovote.ca.gov. Well, one of the big issues on a lot of minds is homelessness. What would the candidates, real estate developer Rick Caruso or Congresswoman Karen Bass, do to help the 42,000 people who live on the streets of L.A. find an indoor place to live? She's examined their plans and fact-checked them against, well, reality. And today we're going to rebroadcast a conversation we had with her recently right here on Greater L.A. Anna, hi.
Hi.
All right. So as different as Bass and Caruso seem, there is overlap in what they say, right? That they're going to do about the unhoused crisis. They're both promising to bring thousands of people indoors, even in their first year in office, whomever wins, right? How?
Yes, that's exactly right. So Bass and Caruso present very differently as candidates. Bass is a Congress member, a longtime Democrat who once headed a social justice nonprofit and also worked in healthcare. Caruso, as you mentioned, is a billionaire real estate developer, best known, of course, for The Grove and the Americana here in LA, and a one-time Republican who registered as a Democrat less than a year ago. But there is a lot of overlap in their proposals on alleviating homelessness, starting with the biggest promises that they're making. Caruso says that if he's elected, he will open 30,000 new shelter beds during his first year in office, which is about double the number of beds that the city has right now. So that's a big promise.
Ambitious, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Bass, meanwhile, says that if she's elected, she will move 15,000 people indoors, either to shelter or to permanent housing during her first year in office.
It's easy to say, but doing it is a different thing. So in other words, they're saying, elect me, I'm going to make a visible dent in this crisis immediately, right?
Yes, exactly, which is what a lot of voters really want to hear. But, you know, we spoke to LA Mayor Eric Garcetti. He said those promises are not very realistic. And so I wanted to go one by one and take a closer look at what they're each saying and how they're saying they're going to get it done. So Garcetti told us Caruso's plan for 30,000 shelter beds could cost something like $800 million, which LA does not have. And I recently sat down with Caruso and asked him how he would pay for those beds.
So you have the federal government that is issuing more money than it's ever issued in the history of the United States, and we're going to tap into that and get our fair share. We have the state of California that has more money than it's ever had in the history of the state of California. Governor Newsom has been very clear that solving the homeless problem is a top priority of his, and we're going to get our fair share from there. And we're going to take a look at our $11 billion budget and reset priorities of what services need to be given to the residents of Los Angeles to make sure we're taking care of our residents and using our taxpayer dollars well.
I asked him if he has any idea where he might cut the city budget to find money for those beds.
I do. I don't want to get into the details of that. And I think really, in honest, it starts with doing a very deep forensic audit.
All right. Not very specific there, right? I mean, but maybe the federal government, maybe the state, but not any particular pot of money identified. And some rearranging, it sounds like, of the city budget. Where would these shelters even go?
Yeah, that's another question that I had. And Caruso says they would go everywhere. They would go all over the city, largely on city-owned surplus land, which also seems like a stretch. It is likely there would be pushback in some neighborhoods to putting shelters everywhere throughout Los Angeles. And not to mention maybe some pushback from city council members who have a lot of control over their districts and what goes in their districts. But to be fair, this is a campaign, right? And campaigning, it is all about making big promises. And what Caruso is really saying without directly saying it is that his priority is clearing encampments off of sidewalks and setting up enough shelter beds to legally enforce anti-camping laws. He says he would like to do that without arresting people or criminalizing poverty, but he's talking to voters who are fed up by the crisis and the situation on the streets. And, you know, he does have other proposals related to homelessness that he doesn't talk about much on the campaign trail, but that I think are interesting.
What proposals?
Well, one reason we're in this crisis is LA has a huge lack of affordable housing. And Caruso says he'll make it easier to build low-income housing in the city, for example, by cutting red tape and also by making it harder to file lawsuits challenging new developments, which is something interesting. But his main argument, his main selling point on this issue, more than any particular policy idea, is that he is a can-do businessman. He's outside the political system that so far has failed to solve homelessness.
And with all due respect, the mayor is a product of that system. Congresswoman Bass is a product of that system. So, of course, when you're in that system and a product of it, you're not going to be able to find solutions outside that system.
He's aiming for Karen Bass, right? So what does Karen Bass have to say about that?
Well, here she is responding to that remark.
It is true. He is outside of the system and has spent a lot of time building luxury housing. So why has he not built one unit of affordable housing?
So she's putting it back on him. Now, in terms of her own big promises on homelessness, she's saying that she's going to house or shelter 15,000 people during her first year as mayor if she's elected.
The bottom line is that we have to do it. 2,000 people died on the streets last year. 1,500 died the year before that. It is not acceptable to me to continue at the speed in which we've been continuing. It just isn't. And so I'm trying to work on a lot of the issues now. There are a lot of regulations that need to be changed.
She says that the things she's working on changing are rules that would make it easier, if changed, for low-income people with rental vouchers to use them, for example. But like with Caruso's plan, it's not clear exactly where the funding would come from for her big promise, the 15,000 number, other than generally asking for federal and state assistance. She is, like Caruso, also promising to make it easier to build affordable housing in Los Angeles and expand existing programs. Like, there's one where the city buys motels, for example, and turns them into homeless housing. But Bass's big selling point, just like Caruso, is really more about personality and background than it is about policy. It's about her image as somebody who has the relationships to bring in help from other levels of government and as somebody who cares deeply about solving homelessness.
I do believe that I can make a dent, and I'm not going to accept that I can't. And people in the city and the county have essentially over these years worked to address and reduce the problem, but not with the fortitude of this has got to end.
So, Anna Scott, what have you heard from voters about how they're deciding who to vote for?
Well, it is these big selling points, I think, that are mostly trickling down to voters. One person I spoke to is Natalie Seaman. She lives in Mount Washington. And just like everybody I've talked to, her top concerns include homelessness and housing affordability, even though she is doing quite well.
30 years ago, I bought my house for $150,000 as a single woman. People have to be able to do that.
Which we know they cannot. She plans to vote for Karen Bass, but not based on any specific policy ideas that Bass has put forward on the campaign trail.
You know, she's being very kind of middle of the road right now, but I look at her values and her background, and those are things that are going to drive my vote.
At the same time, Caruso's supporters are just as confident in his values and his background that he is the person for the job. One of those supporters is Ronald Estrada. He lives in the Elysian Heights area, and he has the same concerns about homelessness.
I think a new perspective, different eyes, newer ideas, and more transparency.
And do you have more faith in somebody who's not part of the existing political system to fix it?
At this time, I do.
That sounds like one common thread that we've heard from everyone today is that the current system just isn't working, regardless.
Yeah, it seems like that's the thing everyone agrees on.
And a lot of promises to go forward with. All right, KCRW's Anna Scott, who covers homelessness and housing. Anna, thanks.
Thank you, Steve.
Well, coming up, in the LGBTQ community, there's a term that's used a lot. It's called chosen family. And ahead, we're going to take you to an event in Griffith Park recently that was all about The Gathering. That's yours on the other side of this.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
Moving on now with Greater LA from KCRW, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Finding community in this giant concrete jungle of a city isn't always easy, but a few weeks back, more than 80 people gathered in Griffith Park for a picnic to celebrate the community that they'd found here. They all gathered for the Sathrung Family Day. Now, Sathrung is a nonprofit that supports the South Asian LGBTQ plus community. And families and friends, old and new, enjoyed good food and conversation and music. And it was all captured on tape by audio journalist Sarita Bhatt. And we're going to hear some of that in just a moment. But first, we welcome Sarita. Thank you for coming on and talking with us about it.
Hi, thank you.
Talk more about the basics of the Sathrung Family Day and the organization and why the event is so important.
Sure. So Sathrung was started about 25 years ago. Basically, several people of South Asian descent, a lot of them were first-generation immigrants, found each other in various LA coffee shops, bars, etc. And they were shocked that they saw other LGBTQ people at, you know, at these places who are also South Asian. So they started to informally kind of gather together in people's houses. Most of these people had never come out to their families, to anyone back home in India, Pakistan, et cetera. And so they really started to build this like network and community amongst each other. And through there, they created a chosen family, a support network, and that's how Sathrung was born.
And you documented it, right, on tape, which I think is so sweet. And can we hear a little bit of that?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. What is the name of this event?
Sathrung Family Day.
So we're on Crystal Springs Drive and Griffith Park.
Please tell me your name.
Supriya Bharadwaj. I'm one of the mentorship board members of Sathrung, the oldest LGBTQ community organization in Southern California. When I was raising children, Sathrung didn't have these spaces for my kids. And so for me, it was really important to kind of make this space available to families that were different and evolving and growing.
My name is Priya Arora. I didn't know that it was possible to be South Asian and queer in all the ways, and it was one of the first places where I found community and saw intergenerational relationships and folks from all walks of life, you know, living their lives in these intersectionalities.
I'm Ray Mathoda, Indian American Sikh lesbian mother, entrepreneur, and the mom of a transgender child. I'm really thrilled that Sathrung and Desi Rainbow have partnered. We've come into Sathrung's amazing event to really make sure that we can have a community forever.
You know, that's what we need, is just to normalize this, just to make it beautiful and wholesome for all of us.
I'm DB Dorababu.
First Family Day, yes.
Okay. I just want to be part of this. Yeah. It's just joy and love.
We are here with our brand new baby, Mr. Aaron, who's going to be 6 months soon.
How old are you?
Three.
How old are you?
Four.
Five.
I'm eight. Actually, no, I'm not.
What are you eating?
Ninja Turtle ice cream.
My name is Nisha Venkat. I go by they, them pronouns. I've lived in Los Angeles for the past 5 years. I went to my first Sathrung event last year. It was the queer Bollywood like disco night. And it was just incredible. You know, I finally felt like whole. I felt like two parts of myself that had constantly been in conflict with each other. My brownness and my queerness were finally able to like come together.
I'm Chandra Arora. I'm proud to be Priya Arora's mom. And to have the extended family right here in LA that I was able to join today. This community, this family of mine represents three S's for me: strength, serenity, and simplicity. How could I not be a part of this? I'm very, very proud of their courage. They're leading us to humanity. It's a journey of 1,000 miles, started with single step, and we have come along so many steps.
Also, always really good food. Like, the samosas are always on point. Just feels very nurturing. It feels like the family cookout that I was never able to have growing up.
I know there's a stigma in different regions of the world around the topic of LGBTQ+, right? And I know queer people are castigated all over the world, and that transcends religion and culture. Is that why there is this need, do you think, for community?
Absolutely. I mean, I think stigma is a fairly soft way of putting it, especially people who come from more quote-unquote conservative communities like South Asia, where A lot of people are not out. I mean, in India alone, they just recently passed for gayness not to be illegal. So many people are not out in this country who come from the South Asian region. They're definitely not. There's a lot of people who are not fully out to their born families. And many people have to unfortunately live with two different identities. You know, they're one person with their family and then their queer, honest self with their chosen family. I mean, I was one of those people for a very long time. So part of this community building is really building safe spaces for these people and for our community. I mean, we keep the location a secret until the day of the event because many people we have learned over the years are still scared. They're scared their parents will find out or their cousins or somebody will see them. So we don't do recordings, photos, videos are generally not taken unless people are given or give their explicit permission. So we have to really be sure that people feel 100% safe with the space that we're creating. There's another organization who this Family Day was done with called Desi Rainbow Parents and Allies. They also host events, talks, and education across the country on a national level. And this year, Sathurang and Desi Rainbow really partnered together to create Family Days so we could really show up as one community in solidarity and support for each other.
You mentioned that it's you found community as well. Talk a little bit about that.
Sure. I mean, I think even in my own coming out journey, to be South Asian, of South Asian descent was one thing, and separate from that was being queer. And that in, you know, in my upbringing on the East Coast and then here in California has been very fairly white centric, to be honest. And so kind of bringing those two things together is a unique experience, and it's a unique set of shared values and understanding that a lot of people have not had. So for me personally, it's been very important to find community, especially for my children, so that they see that how our family structure is normal and it's not something that's othered. And that includes not just being, you know, a family household of two moms, but of, you know, being bicultural. And so I wanted my kids to really see that, hey, there's other queer South Asian families who understand our culture, who, you know, when they smile for a photo instead of say cheese, everyone screams samosa. And that's just a part of our culture in these small nuances that really make, you know, being both South Asian and queer one single experience.
Sarita Bhatt, freelance audio journalist here in Southern California, talking about Sathurang. Thank you so much, Sarita, for coming on and speaking with us.
Thank you. This has been a pleasure. I appreciate it.
This is Greater LA from KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis, and now a moment of jazz from our old friend Thelonious Monk. That's T-Monk's Off Minor from 1957. And that song and jazz in general are inspiration for the arts of Thaddeus Mosley. He's 96 years old and has a solo exhibit up at Art and Practice in Leimert Park. Five large abstract wooden works, all made by hand, and as you'll hear, a few tools as well, simple tools. With us to talk about the show is our art insider, Lindsay Preston Zappas, founder and editor-in-chief of Contemporary Art Review Los Angeles. Welcome, Lindsay.
Hey, Steve.
So the name of the show is Thaddeus Mosley Forest, which is his nickname, which we'll get to in a minute.
Yeah.
But I'm looking at one piece, Off Minor. This is the one based on the T-Monk song, and it kind of defies gravity a bit. I mean, there are three main pieces starting at the base, three big pieces of wood, right?
Yeah.
And it looks like a smoothed out trunk, and then there's this disc with a giant crack in it leaning out. I mean, just explain this.
So as you said, Mosley is really inspired by jazz, and this piece in particular is titled after a piece by Thelonious Monk. And, you know, I read one review that sort of talked about this work as loosely figurative and maybe sort of inspired by Thelonious Monk's figure himself, but I don't know. I don't think it's that literal. I really feel like he's going more for kind of the mood and the feeling of the music, and it's kind of surprising shifts and turns. That centerpiece you were talking about has these grooves that are carved into it that almost look like a thumbprint, or also reminded me a lot of like grooves of a vinyl record.
It's exactly what I thought.
Music. Yeah. But then, like you said, there's this huge crack in the middle that's so bizarre, and it almost splits the wood in half, and yet it remains solid, and it's sort of supporting this other strange circular piece at the top that almost just looks like it's stuck on there. So, you know, I think the piece almost defies physics, and you know, all the while we're kind of seeing the chisel marks and marks and hand of the artist to create a rhythm across the piece. And so he's really inspired by the improvisation of jazz.
And maybe, you know, defies physics, but also weight. That thing has got to be heavy.
Yeah, and I've actually heard that he likes to put sometimes the heaviest pieces on top. So literally defying gravity with some of his works. Yeah.
He, as I mentioned, he references jazz a lot in his work. I mean, how does it show up when you're looking at stuff like this?
So he actually talks about his work as sculptural improvisation. So again, thinking about jazz and the way music's built, but really using the wood itself to inform the compositions that he's building in this really intuitive way, and just kind of going piece by piece and seeing how they kind of curve and hug together. You know, I think he's, again, able to achieve these pieces that look like they're bouncing really precariously. And part of that is just playing with the wood, the way that jazz musicians might kind of play with the notes and riff off each other and kind of get inspiration from what's in front of them. He has said that the only way you can really achieve something is if you're not working so much from a pattern. And he says that's like the essence of good jazz, and I think also the essence of his sculpture. Like, he doesn't go in with a set plan. He really just responds to what's in front of him.
Talk a little bit about his craft and how he does this, right? Because he does this by himself pretty much, right?
Totally. Yeah. And I think, you know, we think of woodworking as something you need like a huge shop and all these tools, and it's this very skilled craft, and it absolutely is and can be. But, you know, the way that Mosley talks about it is so straightforward and simple. You know, he works, like you said, by himself. He's lifting these huge trunks in his studio by himself, and he's in his 90s. And, you know, the pieces really show the mark of his hands. The joints are not perfect. The surfaces aren't smooth. You know, it really shows his process in this raw and unpretentious way.
If you're just carving by hand, you don't need a lot of tools. All you need is a couple of gouges and a chisel and a mallet. So you only need the rudimentary tools.
A couple of gouges, a chisel, and a mallet.
Isn't that great? Yeah. So I just love how approachable he makes it. And, you know, he's also been a teacher of wood carving for a couple decades now. And he's really interested in kind of passing that skill on to a younger generation and making it more accessible and approachable for everyone.
Thaddeus Mosley, Forest is up now at Art and Practice in Leimert Park. Lindsay Preston-Zappas, founder and editor-in-chief of Carla. Lindsay, as always, thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
And if you'd like more information on Thaddeus' show, head on over to our website, kcrw.com/GLA. And while you're at the website, tell us how you're doing. And of course, subscribe to the podcast, too, at kcrw.com/GLA. Or just grab the podcast in whatever way you get your podcasts. We'd be honored to be among them. That's going to do it for us this evening. Tomorrow, a slew of L.A. City Council races that are on the ballot. Maybe you've already voted. Maybe you haven't. We're going to go through the campaigns and hear from folks who live in those districts. That's tomorrow on GLA. Thanks for being with us tonight. And thanks to Jenna Cagle, Juliana Mayo, Phil Richards, Ray Guarna, Amy Ta, Carlos Ramirez, Holly Adams, and Christian Bordahl for helping to put this evening's episode together. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Have a great night.